Hello, welcome to the self-learning platform by Dr. Sushma Singh. Today we are going to start Unit 16, Welfare State. Let us first have introduction about the unit. The term welfare state describes collectively a range of social policies that aim to provide basic services such as health and education, according to the need and normally free of charge through state funding. It is sometimes extended more loosely to areas such as social security, in which individuals are legally required to make substantial contributions in order to receive the benefits. The theory of welfare state is the basis of positive liberalism. It is a sort of state which provides extensive social services to all the citizens, protects the weaker sections, provides economic and social security, and tries to reduce the gap between the rich and the poor. It makes laws to control the economy, nationalizes industries, makes laws to protect the weaker sections, arrange the supply of essential commodities, maintains essential services, and through progressive taxation and income redistribution, tries to reduce the gap between the rich and the poor, and thereby harmonizes the different interests in societies. The existence of some form of welfare is now accepted across most of the social spectrum. However, of late, the concept of welfare state has been radically challenged by the libertarians, for whom it represents a violation of the rights of those who are taxed to provide its. The major point of debate is whether it should be regarded as a safety net establishing a minimum level of welfare beneath which no one is allowed to fall, or as an agency of redistribution from the rich to the poor, fostering greater social equality. Others have also questioned the strength of the welfare state, that is, does it ensure the citizens the necessary income to fight insecurities and enable them to lead a stable, dignified, civilized life? Does it remove inequalities of real income? Thus, the welfare state ushers a trend where private sector be curbed, crippled, and made powerless. Has the welfare state been able to free the economy from booms, depressions, inflation, and other economic crises? The contemporary crisis in the welfare state has given a boost to classical liberalism in the new grab of liberalism. We shall try to answer these questions in this unit. Now, our topic of discussion is evolution of positive liberalism. The later half of the 19th century produced a critique of negative liberalism. The theories of non-interference were found to be inadequate to achieve the social and economic aims of liberalism. The laissez-faire policy was based on the premise that in the good of the individual lies in the good of the society. Negative liberalism believed that the distribution of wealth into ways, profit, and rent was not unjustified. However, the later half of the 19th century saw the rapid concentration of capital in a few hands, monopolistic control of trade, and emergence of big industrial houses, which created many social, economic, and political contradictions. It created a sense of frustration and protest among millions whose livelihood and very life depended upon their new masters, the impersonal corporations. Another factor which undermined faith in the laissez-faire was unemployment, when millions remained outside the workforce for years. Men began to doubt whether the free trade economy, if left to its own laws and harmonizes, actually produced the maximum general goods. In fact, the liberal slogan of liberty began to change into the privilege of the few. In England, the report of the Royal Commission appointed to investigate the coal mining industry shocked everyone about the brutality that existed in the mines, the employment of women and children, barbarously long hours of work, the absence of safety devices, and the prevalence of revolting conditions, both physical and moral. Classical liberalism became a target of attack from all sides. The humanistic criticized it due to its practical consequences, such as poverty, inhuman conditions, unbearable exploitation, illiteracy, and misery for the majority of the population. Writers like Carlyle, Ruskin, Dawkins attacked the capitalist order on moral and aesthetic grounds. The utopian socialist like Robert Owen criticized the capitalist order and the injustice inherent, but appealed to the conscience of the capitalists to take care of the working class. Karl Marx challenged the capitalist system as such and declared that the salvation of the working class lay in overthrowing the capitalist order through revolutionary means and the establishment of a socialist state. In short, liberalism desperately needed revision. A thoroughgoing revision of liberal theory required a re-examination of the natural and functions of the state, the nature of liberty, and the relationship between liberty and authority. Such a re-examination also opened the questions of the relationship between individual human nature and its relation with society, because the old notions such as self-interest, pleasure, and utility provided less convincing. This revision is known as positive liberalism and was carried out by J.S. Mill, T.H. Green, D.G. Rittke in the 19th century, and Hobson, Hobhouse, Lindsay, C.D.H., Cole, Barker, Lasky, Kenny, and McLever and Galbraith in the 20th century. J.S. Mill's ideas of liberalism depart from those of the classical model in four ways. Firstly, he opined that the value of the personality of the individual can be realized in the actual conditions of a free society. Secondly, he accepted political and social freedom as good in themselves, to live one's own life, developing one's own native traits and capacities is not only a means to happiness, but a substantially part of happiness itself. A good society is one which permits both freedom and opens up the opportunity for a free and satisfying way of life. Third, liberty is not an individual good, but a social good. And fourth, the function of a liberal state in a free society is not to leave the individual alone, but also to act as a means of creating, increasing, and equalizing opportunities. T.H. Green brought about an idealistic revision of liberalism. He made it abundantly clear that liberalism could not be placed on narrow foundations. He inferred that at the center of liberal philosophy was the idea of the general good or common human well-being, which is capable of being shared by everyone and which provided a standard for legislation. This standard could not be individual liberty alone. Choice means opportunity, and opportunities means a society that is not coercive beyond need, either in its legal and political structure or in its economic and social structure. Freedom is really as much social as it is an individual conception. It refers at once to the equality of society and the quality of persons that make up that society. Green defined liberty as a positive power or capacity of doing or enjoying something worth doing or enjoying. Freedom implies not only a legal but an actual possibility. Hence, it is impossible that a government should be liberal merely by standing aside and refraining from legislation, or that a liberal society should come into being merely by political inadvertence. The function of a liberal government is to support the existence of a free society, and it can remove many of the obstacles that may stand in the way of moral development, such as ignorance, lack of education, poverty, illiteracy, and unhealthy sanitation conditions. Green did not claim that the legislation could in itself promote moral goodness. Nevertheless, in many situations, legislative interventions alone could bring into existence conditions in which men could exercise freely their faculties of moral judgment, enlarging the area of positive freedom. Similarly, Bonsquent, in his book The Philosophical Theory of State, rejected the negative conception of liberty and contended that the fundamental concept of a genuine and social philosophy must be based upon an idea that the assertion and maximization of self and individuality becomes possible and real in and through society. The end of the state lies in the ensuring conditions for good life. These conditions are rights arising out of man's moral being, which the state seeks to promote. It is the higher sense of liberty, since it presents the greater area of activity and the moral extensive choice to self-determination. At the beginning of the 20th century, liberalism was concerned with several allied problems. In the context of the developing capitalism, namely, to seek a theoretical justification for continued state action for the promotion of social welfare, to integrate socialism into the frame of liberalism. This was achieved by writers like Lasky, Keynes, Barker, etc. For example, Lasky wrote, "Liberty is the power of adding something to common life, a contribution which can only be made if there are certain specific conditions that enable the individual to make the contribution, and that institutional obstacles are not in his way. The state as an agency of the community and not of any one section of it has, through the guarantee of rights, ensured the former, and through regulating legislation, removed the latter." However, during the interwar years, when the organic theory of state was abused by the fascist leaders, the neoliberals were quick to explain the just limits of the state, the promotion of the welfare of the individuals. The state was seen at best as a jester and a coordinator, and the authority exercised by it as morally valid only if it seeks to promote liberty. For this, the liberals maintained the organization of authority must be democratic, the only form of polity consistent with the view of liberty. The democratic polity is to secure fundamental liberties of individuals, to secure a wider area of autonomy for the vast number of voluntary associations through which the citizens realize their several ends, and to secure institutional checks against a possible abuse of power. During 1929-33, the liberal capitalist state had to face a worldwide economic depression, as a result of which the capitalist economy was completely shattered. To cope with the problem of the hunger and mass unemployment, liberalism was compelled to reevaluate its capitalist foundations. To resolve the incapability of free society and a relatively stable capitalist economy, J.M. Keynes, working within the capitalist tradition, went further than any other liberal writer. His conclusion was that there is an inherent imbalance within the capitalist economy. As capitalism matures, this imbalance increases, and the concentration of capital reaches a limit where profitable investment becomes impossible. This leads to economic crisis, leading to mass unemployment. To control trade cycles, Keynes argued for the direct interference of the state so that capital investment could be made, which would in turn fill the gap between the production and consumption, keep the industry working, and will eliminate large-scale unemployment. To save liberalism and capitalism, Keynes felt that the state should have control over the capitalist economy, and the rates of saving, investments, profit, taxation rate, and wages were the state subjects. He did not agree with the antithesis between the capitalism and socialism, and thereby also rejected the antithesis between the individual and the state. This marked not the end, but the enlargement of the fundamental liberal conception of liberty. After the Second World War, how the problems arising out of the war made the interference of the state all the more necessary was reflected in the works of John Galbraith. In his book, the affluent society and the new industrial state. He argued for getting rid of conventional wisdom, that is classical liberalism, and adopted social methods, devoid of ideology. When he suggested certain socialist measures for the welfare of capitalist societies and warned the development countries that if they wanted to get rid of the reoccurring economic crisis, then the interference of the state in the economic field will have to be welcomed. In short, positive liberalism as it evolved during the later half of the 19th and the first half of the 20th century could be distinguished from the classical negative liberalism in many ways. Firstly, although it continued to retain faith in the autonomy, rights, and liberty of the individual, now it believed that the man is a part of social whole and the liberties could be secured only so long as they could be reconciled with the social good. Society was considered a potential harmonious and ordered structure in which all social classes work for common good. Society has its own interest. It has ethical and moral dimensions, and the individual good cannot be achieved without the social good. Secondly, liberty like justice and equality is not an empty social ideal, but derives its specific content from a particular social and historical milieu in which it has to be understood. Liberty in the society implies adjustment of mutual claims that are made possible through a system or rights which are both restraints and liberties. Liberty was not merely the absence of restraints, but conditions necessary for free and full development of the self, which a state, true to its own moral purpose, must ensure. Liberty through compulsion, though a paradox, was justified as practically valid. Only on this ground, it justified social and welfare legislation. Also, liberty implies equality. Equality provided the basis through which liberty comes to acquire a positive meaning. Liberty and equality are complementary. Equality is not only equality before law or mere equality of opportunity or of being treated as a human being, but also economic equality commensurable with political liberty. A modification through state action of the excessive disparities of wealth and of opportunity that follow. Thirdly, positive liberalism believed in regulated capitalist economy in the overall interest of society. The state could check the individual capitalist through economic and social reforms. The conditions of working class could be improved. Poverty, illiteracy, unemployment, and exploitation could be checked. The gap between the rich and the poor could be bridged through the positive action of the state. Fourthly, at the political level, positive liberalism depended upon the proposition that the sense of public good or general welfare is an effective motive of politics. The state is an instrument for the development of human personality through welfare measures. The state has a positive character and is capable of performing socially useful functions. The institutional arrangements for achieving the good of the individual and the society are democracy, representative government, constitutionalism, parliamentary method, universal franchise, party organization. The liberal government is one which protects the rights of the individual as well as of the community. The state is to coordinate different interests and classes in society. It does not belong to a particular class, but to the society as a whole. Here we want to wind up today's lecture. Thank you so much for your attention.